land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We have both Kirk and Dee here this evening. And I just want to talk about one item in the news, then we're going to go back to the 89th Mizmor. And that's what's happening in and around Israel. It is it's just a statement of fact when I tell you that Yahweh said that the last three and a half years prior to his return are going to be vastly worse than at any time in human history, and that there's nothing that has occurred against God's chosen people, Yisrael and Yahudah, that can compare to what Israel's going to endure in these last 3.5 years. And when you think about how ruthless the treatment was for some 80 decades in Egypt, prior to the time that they were enslaved, life was not good, but it was just typical life within the caste systems of human civilizations. But then exceedingly ruthlessness, where a mother would give birth to a boy, and the boy would be then killed, and where taskmasters were beating the survivors to death. And 8 decades of that. And then they come back into the promised land, and it's... infected with all sorts of people that want to do them in. And the most belligerent of them are the Philistines. And as soon as they get some control over that and establish themselves as a nation under Dode, Solomon goes and he gets all religious. And everything falls apart. And Israel becomes its own worst enemy. And it's a house divided, as it is today. And almost immediately after that, we have the Assyrians. And, they were so ruthless, they hauled Jews away into slavery with rings in their noses and chains between them as they dragged them naked into the wilderness. And the Babylonians were so ruthless, they not only had 3 waves of subjugating Jews, but completely destroyed Jerusalem and the Yahweh's home. And, on and on it goes with the Egyptians continuing to torment them, and then, the Greeks. What belligerent jerks they were. And then nothing compares to the 3 assaults, the 3 invasions of Rome. Yeah. But... each of those 3 invasions were against a house divided, where Israelis were against Israelis and invited more and more belligerence from the beast of Rome. And you realize that the diaspora was literally caused by Rabbi Akiva's false messiah, which he invented because he wanted a counter to the false messiah of the Christians. And you realize that how bad that was, because it led to the Holocaust. And God is saying that what the chosen people, the Israelites, are going to endure in the last 3 years, beginning in 2030, is going to be far worse than anything they've endured up to that point. So for it to fall, life for Jews to degrade to that degree between now and 2030, because Yah is returning in 2033, that's year 6,000 Yah, lots have to happen. And of course, we're witnessing it with the progressives and the right in Israel drawing belligerent lines in the sand and really ripping the country apart. I think Lapid should be arrested for treason. And I think the progressives in Israel are a completely lost generation.
Great.
But I think Netanyahu's alliance with the religious renders him counterproductive. So you don't have a rooting side in Israel. But it is a house torn apart at a time when Israel's worst enemy, the greatest mistake by the United States, which was creating essentially statehood, independent government for the Palestinian Authority. And it's about to disintegrate. While Lion's Den and Hamas have about 70-75% approval in Judea and Samaria, the Palestinian Authority doesn't even have 10% approval. And it's made a monster. You know, it's made a monster, saying that we can't capitulate with Jews. We can't work with Jews. You have to hunt and kill Jews. We're going to pay you to go and slay Jews. It's made a monster, and that monster now is uncontrollable. And we're about to lose the Palestinian Authority. And as bad as they are, what Israel's going to endure is going to be far worse. And we're seeing a greater and greater influence of Iran in Judea and Samaria, just as there are hundreds of thousands of rockets and drones pointed at Israel from Lebanon with Hamas. And life in Lebanon is so bad that the Hamas clerics are saying the only way to salvage the economy in Lebanon is to go to war with Israel. And all the while, Saudi Arabia is cozying up to Iran, and Iran gets closer and closer to a nuclear bomb. So we are in a horrible position. And life is going to get intolerable for God's chosen people. The only way to seek salvation from what's going to happen is in the covenant and a return to Yahweh, which
right.
is a very distant thought for most Jews. They won't even say his name. They have no idea that Dod is their Messiah. They have no idea that Dod is the Zeruah, the sacrificial lamb. They have no idea that Dod is the one who is returning, or that he is the Son of God. And all of this must be accepted, because it's Father and Son who are returning together on October 2nd, 2033, Yom Kippurim. So I think as we read through these prophecies in the 89th Mizmor that speak of everything that Dod means to Yahweh and to Yisrael, to the salvation of the world, we need to keep this in mind, that it's now or never. If you are a Jew, it's now or never. You've got to stop trusting the rabbis, stop trusting your politicians, open your minds, come to know Yahweh as he revealed itself. Start reading Yada Yah go to yadayah.com. If you're Jewish, probably better to start with the introduction to God and then go directly to coming home and then begin to read the Yada Yahweh series that will take you through all of the invitations to meet with God. That said, I want to return to the 89th Mizmor. It's the most important piece of literature ever written, apart from the Torah itself. And while we're talking about it, too, we will probably take a quick trip into Yeshaya 52 and 53, because they speak of the same subject. Where we left off last week was I went through a list of titles that were presented within the 89th Mizmor, and we're only at a third of the way through. And so thus far, the 89th Mizmor has already used Dod's name twice. It is called Dod, the Chosen One, twice. Yahweh has referred to Dod twice as my co-worker. Two occasions he has spoken of Dod as his restoring and eternal witness. He is the articulate leader, the Mashal, once. He is the Yamin, right hand of God, once. He is the Azad Yad, strong hand of God, once. He is the Gebura, which is the feminine manifestation of Yah's most capable individual and most courageous individual, two times. Be concerned that that we would use a feminine title to speak of Dod. Feminine titles are used throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and particular when it's appropriate, as it is in this case, because it's Dod's soul is the one that fulfilled the Moed Mikre, and a soul is feminine. Dod is called the set-apart one of Israel once. He is called the Gabor, God's most courageous and capable man once, and he is even called in the first one-third of the 89th Mizmor, the Messiah, anointed. There is one title, however, that is, I don't think heretofore, ever addressed to Dod, that is used four times, and it is a vastly more important title than Messiah, Messiah. It is Zeruah. And it is Dod's most important title. It appears in his most important Mizmor Psalm four times. It says that Dod, David, is the protective shepherd and the sacrificial lamb. Share just snippets from this first 21st verses, and then we'll move on into the text. God said of Dod, I have established cutting through separation, the Bereth covenant for the family home through Ani Bakir, my chosen one, the person I prefer and have decided upon. I have sworn an oath, and I will affirm this promise seven times over, Shabbat, to Dod, the beloved, Ebed Ani, my authorized agent and co-worker who serves on my behalf. Furthermore, as an ad olam, eternal witness to the restoring testimony, I will prepare and establish your offspring and that which you sow, Zerah, Atta. In addition, I will construct a home for your throne and your seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout all time. Pause now and contemplate the implications. Beside you and on your behalf, the Zeruah, protective shepherd and sacrificial lamb, with Geborah, tremendous power, inspiring courage, outstanding character, and awesome ability, will be your Azaz Yad, strong hand, raised up on high at your Yamin, right side. For our deliverance and protection are from Yahweh. Accordingly, the Kodesh, set-apart one of Yisrael, is Armalek king. Therefore, in relation to this, logically, you spoke in relation to your Makadim, chosen and tested one, saying, I have equated and bestowed assistance, supplying what is needed on behalf of the Gabor, the most courageous and capable man, unwavering with you. In addition and beyond this, Ani Zeroah, my protective shepherd, strong arm and sacrificial lamb, will empower and embolden you, strengthening you while enabling your growth. Well, that's a pretty good list of characteristics for a man that Paul, the author of the Christian New Testament, and Peter both claimed was dead and buried and thus replaced. And that's an impressive list of credentials for a man the rabbis prefer to denigrate rather than celebrate. Now, Kirk, I know that you did your homework and you have analyzed the letters that comprise Zeroah. Before we move on, what did you learn about the great Zeroah as a title?
Well, it's only four letters, but it's a lot of meat on the bone. It starts out with a zain is a plow. It's used now. Let me just say, because we have a few people that are probably new, that once again, the ancient Hebrew or the pictographic use of the words that make up the words are thought of in terms or understood in terms of a concrete language. It is
right.
Things that you feel with your senses. You know, you can smell it, you can touch it, you can hear it, so forth and so on. So they saw things very concretely, as opposed to philosophically, as you might in Greek and English and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So when you read these, they used symbols that reflect that.
Right.
The Zayin is simply a plow. It is used by a man to cut a straight path to a point on the horizon. That's the way you do plow. It opens the soil, which is a metaphor for the vine, to make it fertile and allow the seeds, which I use as a metaphor for knowledge, to grow. The second letter on it is a resh. As a picture, it is pictured as a head. It has eyes to see, it has and read. It has ears to listen, a mouth to share what is learned, a brain to process information and to understand. It's also a force and is an exceptional wordsmith, one who teaches and guides. The wall is drawn as is depicted as a tent peg. We found out it's probably not like a Y, upright Y letter. It may be at that time it may have been a little loop with a peg, but nonetheless. It's a tent
like
peg.
Like we'd make a tent peg today. Most tent pegs today have loops in them, so you can tie your line. So you can tie your line.
Tie your rope
them.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yes, you don't have to
right.
hope it slips off. So it's regardless, it's still used for the same function. It increases. It's used to secure and enlarge the home, and that's always the goal, to increase the family. It's always from. It has been that way from the beginning of the story, from the narrative. The fourth letter is an ayin. That's a I. It symbolizes perspective. When one aligns one's perspective with Yahweh's, they are held in great value to Yahweh, and becoming an empowered and enlightened and co-worker and embed. You know, I've added a lot to these letters. As I recognized one time that as we take the words and we extrapolate from that what all these meanings can be and use them according to the context, I felt very comfortable now if I do that, as long as I know the context of where it is the row is being used. And in most of these, those would all be quite pertinent to that. I did avoid a little bit of the basic thing, this is this, that, and the other, that you've used mostly in yours as well. So in most of the lexicons have so many meanings, you have to use a certain amount of your time and spin it. What does that mean in context of this word used in this sentence or in this passage? Mm-hmm. I did mention, if I may, the Zoroa was their task. There's three, obviously, and the Zoroas are tasked with a most difficult and rewarding job of all. And this is my opinion here. And the difficulty seems to me that it is less about confronting the adversaries as dealing with the apathy of Israel. It represents more people who strive against God than walk the path towards him. However, the job does bring, and as far as I can tell and from what I know of the Zoroas, the reward obviously is like my minor little part, is working alongside Yahweh. He will not and he cannot work alone. He cannot expunge free will. One must be allowed to respond or reject him. And there must be an alternate choice. So the Zoroas were chosen to increase Yah's family. It's always the same theme. It's always about increasing Yah's family. And he equips them well. I can carry on if you want a little bit, or you tell me.
As I look at Zoroa, the things that are interesting is that Yahweh defines the term in his first use, and throughout the Torah, Zoroa is used of the sacrificial lamb and the very descriptive, concrete presentation of the sacrificial lamb pursuant to Pesach Passover. So that's Yahweh's primary usage. The secondary uses as a strong arm that has considerable influence. The verbal root, which is usually the way that we define most words in Hebrew, is zera. And zera means to sow seeds, such that they take root and grow, creating new life and greater productivity. So you have these unique intermixing of things where Yahweh uses in the Torah to speak of the sacrificial lamb, and yet it also speaks of a strong arm, which is its lead definition in most lexicons, and it's from a verbal root that speaks of sowing seeds such that they take root and grow, producing new life. I think the reason for this breadth here is that begins with that plow, the Zayin, because someone who is productively sowing seeds so that they grow, producing new life, doesn't just throw them on the ground. They prepare the soil for it. They think of what is the best way to sow these seeds so that they take root and grow. They cultivate what they have grown. It's a very thoughtful approach, and you have to prepare the ground first and foremost for those seeds. And one of the things that a plow does, this first letter, is it tills over the weeds so that the roots of the weeds that were in the land are turned upside down. They're baked by the sun, and the leaves of the weeds that would draw energy from the sun are upside down, and so the weeds die. And oxygen and nutrients and water are all now able to permeate the ground, and the ground is softer for the roots to grow, and it's and much easier now to plant those seeds so that they're not consumed by predators and birds and blown away by the winds or scorched, but they're actually in the earth, and it's prepared for them, which is why the second letter of Zera is a thoughtful person, the Rosh, thinking it through.
Yeah, agree. Totally agree.
It's a very systematic way to sow seeds so that they grow. Now, in Yahweh's parlance, a seed can be one of two things. He uses seeds as a metaphor for one of two things. You're sowing ideas, and ideas are conveyed through words. So the words that are being sown that are take root and grow, producing new life, is an accurate portrayal of Yahweh's testimony. So you can be a Zoroa. Like, for example, there are three Zoroa. the third Zeruah is the little Z. All he does is sow the seeds, prepares the ground, cultivates them. And so part of Zeruah is a thinking individual with that plow, plowing the ground and preparing the distribution of these seeds so they take root and grow. So this is an essential part of it. But you have a word now that means sacrificial lamb, productive shepherd, strong and influential arm. Now, the strong arm is also impactful because God works through people. Dode is listed as the strong arm of God, the right arm of God. And that means that somebody that God is using forcefully, using influentially to reach out and lift up his people. You use your arm to write, which is Yah's favorite way of communicating. The arm, from Yah's point of view, in terms of conveying a message, particularly sowing the seeds, is vastly more important than using your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
God is much more into the written word than he is into the spoken word.
Absolutely.
So all of these things matter. And then you get to the ain at the end of the word, which is perspective. Look at the perspective. View this word from all of those angles and to understand how it can be used in each of these situations where Moshe, for example, is specifically called a Zeruah. Now, not nearly as often and not as profoundly as Dode, but he is a Zeruah in terms of he was a productive and protective shepherd, guiding Yah's people. And no one sowed more seeds that have taken root and grow than did Moshe through the Torah.
Yes.
So Moshe is a living embodiment of this. And Yahweh constantly said that during the Exodus, he used a strong arm to forcibly remove his people from religious and political corruption. Moshe was that strong arm.
Mm-hmm.
You might say, wait a minute, he's an 80-year-old broken-down shepherd. Huh. From Yahweh's perspective, he was a brilliant orator, a thoughtful individual with exemplary character. It would be hard to find a more effective influence on his people than was Moshe.
Yeah.
And then you look at Dode. He wrote these mizmor with his strong arm. He held the sword to defend Israel with his strong arm. He was hung on Passover's pole by those arms. He is the vantage point, the perspective that we ought to look at the covenant and understand the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre. He is the thinking man's prophet, more so than anyone who has ever lived. And no one drew a line in the sand more distinctive than did Dode or prepare the ground of Yisrael for his return with Yahweh. This is a profoundly important title. And before we go to the back to the 89th Mizmor, I'm going to share with you what I was dealing with earlier today as I was trying to complete the rewrite of what is Volume 4 of Yada Yahweh on the Mikre, Invitations to Meet with God. It is covering both Pesach and Matzah. And because this is the preamble into the 53rd Mizmor, which is the most effective presentation of the purpose of the Passover lamb. Dode does the best job in Mizmor 22, writing in first person, describing how he's going to serve as the Passover lamb. Yashaya takes it from there and said, as a result of Dode doing that, here are the benefits for us. And so that is introduced by the following. And understand that there are no chapter breaks in the great Isaiah scroll. It all reads as one narrative. Awake, become alert, be roused from your stupor, and rise. Choose to become clothed and adorned in power. which strengthens and protects, emboldens and equips, enables and empowers. Zion, these signs posted along the way, choose to be adorned in garments beautifying and honoring you, making you radiant. O Jerusalem, as the source from which instruction and guidance on reconciliation flow, the set-apart, special, and unique city, it's true that never again will the uncircumcised nor the stubborn, the unresponsive and forbidden, especially the defiled and impure who are religious, come to be included among you. Of your own initiative, apart from the political religious influences, shake off and keep away from that filth, the dirt and rubbish, these shades of gray that are all about to be pulverized, and arise, standing upright and restored. Stay, dwell, and endure in Jerusalem. Free of all societal influences and of your own volition, release the bonds and the shackles upon your neck, O captives who are politically and religiously controlled. Bath Zion, restore and rebuild the house and family, pursuant to the signs posted along the way. Therefore, right here and now, says Yahweh, you have been betrayed, having surrendered yourself in exchange for nothing and for naught, without even the benefit of a rational argument. And so those of you who are redeemed will be brought back without people value. For thus says Yahweh, in an earlier time, my people descended, going down to Mitzrayim, the crucibles of political and religious oppression, to dwell there as strangers. Then the Assyrian oppressed and mistreated them, defrauded and exploited them beyond measure and without cause. So then, why should I be concerned here, prophetically asks Yahweh, since my people are led away and accept this for nothing, without a valid reason and in vain? Their orators, their political and religious rulers, those who exercise governmental and clerical power and authority over them, their sages, and those who are considered wise, and those whose pontifications have become notorious, all lack understanding, and they exercise poor judgment, such that they simply cry and scream while failing to offer reasoned conclusions or warranted insights, prophetically declares Yahweh. Well, every day, continually and constantly, my name is despised. It's rejected and treated with contempt, spurned and devalued, and disrespected, avoided, and disdained. So therefore, my family will know, and they will make known my name. And as a result, in that day, indeed, I am he who will declare, behold, look now and see, here I am. How suitable and befitting, desirable and appropriate, especially pleasing. Upon the mounts is the stance of the person who proclaims the good news, the one serving as a herald and a messenger in the flesh who announces on behalf of those who are listening, reconciliation, restoration, and renewal. Of the individual in the flesh who conveys this positive and uplifting message, publishing the report, which is good, generous, beneficial for those who will listen, announcing and proclaiming deliverance and salvation, liberation and freedom, and who speaks on behalf of Zion, the signs posted along the way. Your God, he reigns and provides counsel. The lone voice, a singular individual, will actually choose to actively engage, to literally articulate that which has been communicated by your watchmen who have witnessed the future and revealed what is going to occur, arranging and laying out what they have seen before you. They will lift up the voices proclamation, all together in one accord, singing joyously. Indeed, this is because eye to eye, they will see the return of Yahweh to Zion with mercy, love. Choose to be serene while bursting forth, shouting and singing for joy, all together as one. Desolate places of Jerusalem, the source of teaching and guidance on reconciliation. For indeed, Yahweh has shown compassion and has comforted his family, and he has redeemed Jerusalem. Yahweh has exposed and drawn out, stripping off the bark to reveal that which is associated with Kodesh Zerara Hu, his set-apart and special sacrificial lamb, his uniquely productive and protective shepherd, even the one who separates unto him by separating or sowing his seeds, which yield new life and grow. Before the sight and perceptions of every Gentile, everyone to the ends of the earth will witness the final salvation and deliverance of our God. Come, come. Be removed by turning away, such that you are withdrawn from there, but do not make contact with or be plagued by anything unclean, polluted, or defiled. Choose to go forth and be withdrawn from her midst, those who lift up every and lift up, carry forward and advance Yahweh's adornment will be enlightened and illuminated. For you will not go out in hurried trepidation, nor walk as a refugee, because Yahweh presence, the God of Israel, will gather together and receive you in the harvest. He will be called the God of the entire earth. Behold, my servant, Ebed-Ani, will gain understanding, prudently offering sound teaching, leading to the proper response, providing insights to successfully accomplish this mission. Then he will be raised on high, honored and supported. He will be increased dimensionally to the greatest extent possible, while his capability and influence, even his title and position, will be elevated. As a result, and for the benefit of the relationship, many of the most repugnant and corrupt will actually be astonished and stupefied, stunned, and then ravaged by you. Comparatively, this individual's perspective, his comprehension and understanding, and his dignified appearance will be well beyond the descendants of Adam. Accordingly, he will choose to anoint the most abundantly enriched of the Gentiles. Because of him, the mouths of the political rulers will be shut. Indeed, that which for the benefit of the relationship he has recounted and itemized in writing about them, they will witness and be shown. And what they had not listened to will finally be understood. That is the 52nd chapter of Yeshaya. Salvation is from Yahweh. And it speaks of Yahweh calling his people home in the last days, and of him providing a herald, a witness, someone he has chosen to make the way home known to his people, his name known to his people, and who will aggressively denounce political and religious leaders in Israel, and particularly in Jerusalem. And oh, by the way, he's a Gentile. And so then God asks, without even catching his breath, who has affirmed and established, providing a verifiable accounting of our message? and to whom? Has the Zeruah, the protective shepherd and sacrificial lamb of Yahweh, been revealed and made openly known? This is the preamble to Yeshayah 53, one of the most important passages in the entirety of the Torah and prophets. And now God is asking a question unlike any that he has ever posed anywhere else in the prophets. And he's speaking of one individual in both cases who is at this moment in time accurately conveying a verifiable accounting of our message. Who's our? Yahweh is the speaker. He's speaking through Yeshayah, so he's clearly including Yeshayah, but he's also speaking of the Zeruah.
Yes.
Who is Dod and also Moshe. I think he's including all of them.
Well, I think.
And the reason I decided we would go and cover this before we return to the 89th Mizmor, particularly with the four mentions of the Zeruah in the 89th Mizmor as Dod's most important title, is that prior to this effort of Yada Yahweh, where we've been doing this now for 22 years, calling Yisrael back home to Yahweh and to your Zeruah, your sacrificial lamb who fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shabuah for you, and who will soon be fulfilling the Day of Reconciliation, Yom Kippurim, leading to Sukkah. Is I don't think there's anything apart from Yahweh's name that is as important as understanding the role of the Zeruah and the identity of the Zeruah. The Zeruah exists to fulfill the Moed Mikre, beginning with Pesach. And the Zeruah is God's son, the Messiah, Dod, known today as David. He lived three lives, just as he was anointed three times. And the second life, he came to fulfill the first four Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE, on the pagan calendar. And so he will return to fulfill the final two, Yom Kippurim, where he plays the starring role, and then Sukkah, where he is king forever. And so God, before he explains the role of the Zeruah, the sacrificial lamb, which is the purpose of presenting Yeshayah 53, the first question he asks is, who is the person who is correctly conveying our message? And who is the person to whom the identity and the purpose of the Zeruah was made openly known?
Dod and Yada.
Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah, it's, you're listening to it right now.
Yeah.
Fulfillment of that prophecy. And there is, you know, sometimes they'd be equivocal and say, you know, it doesn't appear to be any other candidate.
Yeah,
here, there isn't an even, we're going back 3,000 years since Dod made the announcement of who he is and what he's going to do, and 2,700 years since Yeshayah wrote these words. And not a single soul in all of that time has answered that question. And there's no one else even doing it now. And so there's no question that what you're listening to is the very fulfillment of that prophecy. And that's only important so that pay attention to what God is saying, because it's essential that you know that Father and Son have worked together to fulfill the seven Moed Mikre, and those seven Moed Mikre exist to provide eternal life. Your perfection as Dod's soul carried our guilt into Sheol and deposited it there, never to be seen again, so that we would look perfect in Yahweh's eyes. And then the firstborn son became the literary embodiment of Bakurim, which means firstborn children. And then he was enriched and empowered, showing the way that God will treat all of his covenant children on Shavuot. This mission began on a Teruah day 22 years ago, 2001, when Yahweh asked me to do this for you. And we have lived Teruah for 10 to 14 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week now for 22 years. And this is the ultimate crescendo of that course, the declaration that the Masiach, the Malach, the Bashar is Dod. And he is our Zeruah. He is Yahweh's Zeruah, not only strong arm, but the sacrificial lamb who fulfilled Pesach. Speaking of this individual, Yashaya, who, by the way, he has to be, we have to appreciate Yashaya's exuberance here. And Yahweh loves his prophets, and he speaks through his prophets, but he allows his prophets to convey their thoughts as well. Yeah. And clearly, Yashaya is enthralled with what's going to happen. And the reason Yashaya is so enthralled about this is, first of all, he loves Yahweh, and to love Yahweh means you're going to love his son, Dod. And to be a prophet, you know the role that the Zeruah played in enabling us to be part of the covenant family. He's our Savior. And so Yashaya is predisposed to want that message shared. But Yashaya, who was the most comprehensive of the prophets, did not have a single person during his lifetime who was drawn into Yahweh's home and the covenant family as a result of what he wrote. And I'm here to tell you, Yashaya is brilliant beyond compare. And yet not a single person was there outside of heaven's door when Yahweh brought him into heaven and opened the door for him to see. And he was devastated by
Christ.
And Yahweh said, not to worry. Not to worry, my friend.
Yeah, I got a plan.
What you have said here is going to take root and it's going to grow. It's just not today. And then he showed Yashaya how a sucker would grow from that old rootstock. Dod himself emerged. And how Yahweh would apply 7 spirits to enable him to understand his Torah and prophets and present the story that God wanted to tell his people to call them home accurately. And then throughout Yashaya's prophecy, just as we read in Yashaya 52 and now in 53, Yashaya constantly draws our attention to this witness, the final witness, the Bashar, this herald, because it is Yashaya's words that are being heralded that will be used to call God's people home. And Yashaya is thrilled. I mean, it's a thrill in and of itself to be chosen by God for a role as important as Yashaya's, the most comprehensive of the prophets. But to know that your words have taken root and that new life is going to grow from them, and that God's going to be ultimately thrilled with the results of what you have revealed, is such a blessing. And this is what Yashaya is celebrating. And so he says, he will arise and be lifted up, similar to the sucker, before his appearance, to prepare in advance of his arrival the rootstock of the land after a long drought. His approach will not be perceived as particularly pleasing because he will not provide a superficial outline or a shallow two-dimensional sketch. He's going to dig well below the surface. like Dode, verbose. He will not hold a high office. He will not be a nobleman. He is not going to be a king. Readily apparent that we would desire him, want to be him, or even be pleased with him. He will be scoffed at, sometimes ridiculed, dismissed, and discredited. I guess 10,000 death threats would qualify for that. By a wide variety and considerable number of individuals who will try to stop him. Yes, sirree. Even so, Yada will come to know, he will come to understand and acknowledge the implications of the sorrow and suffering, of being plagued and afflicted by evil. And as such, from him, the presence will be averted. That is to say, he will understand what the Zoroa went through to bring us our salvation, even though it will be averted from him. We will censor him. This is now Yashaya speaking of his people. We will slander him as uninformed, unimportant, and disreputable as we scoff at and ridicule him, dismissing and discrediting him, because we will not properly assess his contribution by contemplating what he has composed. Yashaya 53:3. So with that introduction, let's continue, if we can, through the 89th Mizmor. There's more to this than just the understanding the words that Yahweh conveyed about his son. When you combine this Mizmor and Yashaya, and they are hand in glove, what I think Yahweh wants you to know is you're being given a second chance. This is your opportunity to finally embrace the importance of understanding this relationship between father and son, Yahweh and Dode, and how working together they fulfilled the Moed Mikre, and how the Moed Mikre, these seven invitations to meet with God, collectively fulfilled the promise associated with the covenant, such that we could live forever in our father's family, perfected, enriched, empowered by him. As such, I will place my hand into the sea and my right side adjacent to flowing waters. This is Mizmor 89:25. When God uses symbolic language like this, we have to understand what things he's talking about. The sea is a reference to Goyim, Gentiles. Mm-hmm. The land speaks of Jews. The sea is Goyim, Gentiles. When God says his right side, he's talking about what Dode in particular represents, but more generally Yahud and Yahudim, Jews. And adjacent to living waters, the living waters are restorative. And so the living waters come forth from Jerusalem under the Temple Mount, and God is saying that my right side will be next to those flowing and living waters as my hand and influence go into the sea. One brings life, the other is death. This is separation. And this is how Dode is going to return. Dode, when he returns, he's, again, Yahweh does not like to work alone. He has chosen Dode to work through. Dode is going to eliminate, defend Yisrael by eliminating her foes, those Gentiles who have come against God's people.
Yeah.
And to explain this, he says in the next statement, 89:22, the adversary, Oeb, the hostile opposition, will not outwit or nullify him. And the son of evil will not deny him or denigrate him, because he will have no answer for him. The adversary, you know, that's the snake in the garden. That is Ha-Satan.
Yeah.
And Ha-Satan is going to play his trump cards at this time. And the corporeal version of Satan is going to come into Jerusalem on the first of Abib, 2030, 14 days before the two witnesses arrive. And he will come in as a peacemaker and will immediately be a warrior. And Israel will be the prize, not to elevate, not for victory, but for destruction. And it is Dodd who will stop him in the end, 3.5 years after he arrives. And so the adversary throughout time has not been God's adversary. You know, Satan is navel-length by comparison to God. Satan cannot prevail going spirito spirito against Yahweh. And so Satan's entire mindset is, if I can only degrade and defeat Dodd, one man, I win. Mm-hmm. I can't defeat Yahweh, and yet I want to be Yahweh. I want to be above the Most High. I want to be worshipped as if I were God. And the only way to do that is not to attack God, because, well, that's not a fair fight. That's a guaranteed loser, is to attack Dodd. So why is it that Christianity, both Peter and Paul, base Christianity on the notion that Dodd is dead and buried, and therefore everything that God said about Dodd has to apply to their misnomer, Jebus? Because the adversary knows that for him to prevail, he has to defeat Dodd. If Dodd is dead and buried, there is no Passover. Not fulfilled. It means there's no eternal life.
Right.
If Dodd is dead and buried, there is no benefit of matzah. Not a single soul can be redeemed. Is Dodd alone fulfilled matzah? Without Dodd, there is no fulfillment of firstborn children. Therefore, there's no adoption into the covenant family. Without Dodd, not a single soul is enriched and empowered by God as a result of the fulfillment of those first four mikrei. Without Dodd, there's nothing to herald on Teruah. And most importantly, and this is the key, without Dodd, there's no return on Yom Kippurim. And without this message that we're conveying on behalf of Dodd as his heralds, there is no one there to greet Yahweh, there for whom to return. God can't return to no one. There can't be reconciliation if no one's there. If God's people don't understand Yahweh's name and the importance of his son as the Zeruah, Satan wins. Because there is no Dodd in the minds of the people to fulfill Yom Kippurim, which is the last chance. And there's no one to whom Yahweh can return to reconcile his relationship with his people. And under that basis, Satan wins. So the adversary's primary goal is to discredit Dodd as the Zeruah, as the Mashiach, as the returning king, as the son of God. But what is Yahweh saying here? He will not outwit or nullify him. Now, I'm here to tell you that Satan isn't all that bright. And Dodd is brilliant. And the reason I know that Satan isn't all that bright is that within the last year, I've translated the entirety of Ezekiel. And Ezekiel is Satan's autobiography.
And it is stupid.
And it is, you know, a lot of it is just flat-out stupid. A lot of it is just grotesquely immoral. Most of it's so thinly disguised that it's just laughable, and huge swaths of it are repulsive. So I can say for certain that Satan's not that bright. Now, that's embarrassing because he's the god of religion. He is Hashem. He is Jesus Christ. He is Allah.
Yeah.
But he's not going to outwit or nullify Dod. In the end, the single most important battle that the adversary has ever fought, which is to nullify Dod's identity as the Zeruah, the Passover lamb, as our Savior, as the Son of God, as the exemplar of the covenant, as the Messiah, is for naught. And then he says, and the son of evil will not deny him or denigrate him because he will have no answer for him. Son of evil has been Allah. The son of evil is a title that's applied to Shaul, known as Paul, the man who either authored or inspired some 90% of the Christian New Testament. I say that because he, of course, wrote 14 books of the Christian New Testament, and he, in addition to that,
is the
inspiration for Mark, for Luke
and Acts,
for the book of books of Acts, and clearly Matthew, who was not a disciple of the book of Matthew, was written about 90 CE. Was a fan of Shaul. And the book of Chabaouk tells us everything about Paul, about Shaul.
Mm-hmm.
Every aspect of his nature, his timing, his approach. And Yahweh calls him both the son of evil and the plague of death. So this term is to identify a singular person. And so who is the primary adversary of Dod as the Zeruah among men?
It's Paul.
Paul. Yeah, Paul, a Jew who was a rabbi. In fact, he's the first Jew to use the term rabbi.
Yeah.
Paul, the very essence of Pauline Christianity is replacement theology. And the essence of replacement theology is that everything that was said of Dod David is stolen from him and applied to this misnomer, Jesus Christ. And you might say, wait a minute, you know, I thought that Yahweh's focus was on his own people, so why isn't he condemning Judaism as opposed to Christianity? Well, first of all, Christianity was created by a Jew, a very religious Jew, a Jewish rabbi. Mm-hmm. The first, in fact, to call himself a rabbi. And it is Paul's religion that has created more harm for Jews than any other.
Yes.
And beyond that, if it wasn't for Paul and Peter, who helped enormously, creating Christianity, this egregious lie on the basis of a false Messiah and false Son of God, and the idea that the God-man was killed and died, and that he was killed by Jews, of all speaking of myths, if it wasn't for that, there would be no Judaism. The religion of Judaism doesn't date back to the oral Torah. There was no oral Torah. The first practitioners of rabbinical Judaism, the religion that's practiced now, the one that's based on the Talmud, goes back to Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva gained power by opposing the myths that were growing out of Christianity, the false Messiah. And so the way that he chose to create the religion of Judaism was to promote his own false Messiah, Bar Kokhba. That's how you get the star that's on your flag and on your kippahs and the symbol of the Jewish religion. It's the same star. Bar Kokhba means son of a star. And it was all done as a way to maintain control over Jews. And so there is no rabbinical Judaism without Pauline Christianity. And so the way that Satan went about demon-possessing Paul, which Paul even admits, so that he would create Christianity to directly negate what the Zoroah stood for, that Dodo is the Messiah, the Son of God, and the Passover Lamb. That is the essence of what Christianity was built upon, because all those things were stolen from Dodo to give to this mythical misnomer, Jesus. And then to counter that, Rabbi Akiba foisted another false Messiah on his people, which led to the diaspora, the destruction of Israel, the renaming of the land, which gave us the Fakistinians, and then ultimately the Holocaust. This is all related to the son of evil. So you have the adversary mentioned and then the son of evil. The son of evil is not the adversary.
Right. It's
Paul.
That's it.
Who is the spawn of Satan, the one that he possessed. And what has he done these past 2,000 years? Well, denied Dodo, said he's dead and buried, denigrated him, robbed him of his dignity. And God's saying, 2,000 years may seem like a long time to you. It's a blink of an eye for me. And Dodo is, when he comes back, he will not be denied. And that's not good news for those in the sea who Dodo is has been called to eradicate. Shoah, which was the first verb here, it says the adversary, the Oeb, will not nullify him, is Shoah. Shoah is a really important term here because it's the operative verb in the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone. And it is the only unforgivable sin listed in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. God says that if you Shoah his name, he will not forgive you. The essence of rabbinical Judaism, the kernel that it took from the predecessors, is to denigrate Yahweh's name, never to say it. You will not find Yahweh's name in the Jerusalem Talmud or the Babylonian Talmud. You won't find it in the Mishnah. You won't find it in the Zohar. They've written Yahweh out of their lives. They've denigrated his name. And Shoah is God saying, now this, the adversary, he thinks that he has Shoah denigrated my name. Isn't going to happen. He is not going to prevail with his attempt to Shoah. And Shoah is the basis, by the way, of the Shiva system that the Masoretes came up with to hide the pronunciation of Yahweh's name. Their vowel pointing system, which was a complete and utter waste of time because there are five vowels among the 22 letters in the Hebrew language. Anybody with 5 cents of intelligence can figure it out by looking at words like Torah and Haya and Eloah and Shalom and know how to pronounce each of the five vowels in the Hebrew language, and Yahweh's name is all vowels. So the rabbis created for their Masoretic text the Shiva system of vowel pointing, which is based on a word that says to negate, to nullify, to denounce. And that is the basis of their Masoretic system.
How stupid can you be?
How belligerent can you be?
But still.
Yeah. You jerks. I know. It's just so obvious But, you know,
yeah,
to,
I mean, we've talked about that
to
for
figure
years,
it out.
Just go, wow.
Listen.
Yeah.
Dode wrote the 22nd to Ms. Moore in first person, vividly mm-hmm. portraying what he was endure as the Passover lamb via Roman crucifixion. And then what he would endure with his soul taking our guilt with him into Sheol. And Yeshaya 53 is very specific about how his soul would unburden us from our guilt, yeah, doing these things for us as the Lamb of God. The story is undeniable. The words are very clear. And in the first 30 Mizmor, Dode meticulously explains the role he's going to play in our salvation as the sacrificial lamb and why he chose to do it and why Yahweh accepted Dode as the person he would work through to fulfill the Moed Mikre. It's all there, and it's all obvious. It's just so radically different than what we have been indoctrinated to believe that there's a tendency to read through it until you just say, wait a minute, I cannot ignore this anymore. This, 1,000 years before crucifixion existed, Dode wrote specifically about how he was going to be crucified as the Passover lamb. And he wrote about it in first person. What are you to make of that? So the very thing that we did 22 years ago when we began this journey is to say we're going to go where the words lead. And mm-hmm. if God says something, even if it's anti-religious or anti-political, that's where we're going. And Dode's declarations in first person of what he was going to accomplish as the Passover lamb are irrefutable. You got to go where the words lead. Same thing is true here. It's all one cohesive story. So we just go where the words lead. This is an important lesson because it means that God is protective of his name and his reputation, but also of his sons. The attack on one is an assault on the other. To degrade the son by failing to acknowledge what he has done, how he sacrificed himself to save Yisrael, or to replace him with a mystical misnomer, as in the case of both Judaism and Christianity, is to garner his father's wrath. As for Allah, it's A-W-L-A-H,
Allah.
It's transliterated. Mm-hmm. It was used by Chabauk, Habachuk, in 2:12, to reveal that Shaul Paul, the plague of death, would build an evil edifice. Therefore, Yahweh is tying each of these clues together for us so that we might understand Satan's desire to degrade Yahweh's chosen. That's his end game. It's his only game.
Mm-hmm.
God does not want us fooled into denying or trivializing the Zeruah. And yet, in Rabbinic Judaism, you look at the principles of Judaism, there is no mention of any, much less these first four and ultimately all seven of Yahweh's Moed Mikre having been fulfilled. There's no mention of them being fulfilled by Dode. There's no mention of Dode's name in any of them. There's an awaited
really?
Messiah, and they don't even know his name. Pathetic.
Great.
Wow.
While the adversary, as HaSatan, is singular, as is his prodigy, the son of evil, Shaul, when working together as they did to conceive Christianity, they became sorry, adversarial foes. Beyond this, to the best of my knowledge, there are only three prominent individuals who claim to speak for God while admitting to being demon-possessed.
Yes.
The people's choice, King Shaul, Saul, the wannabe apostle and false prophet, Shaul, Paul, and the self-acclaimed messenger of God, Muhammad, all admitted they were demon-possessed. That's the spawn of Satan.
Didn't phase us all.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine Christians go along and, you know, the founder of the religion is Paul, and Paul admits at the end of 2 Corinthians that he's demon-possessed. And they read right through it. It just can't process it. Yep. Shaul's name will even appear within the text of this Mizmor, eliminating any doubt as to the identity of this wicked child. And may we applaud, the title is fitting. It's stupefying that no one has bothered to ask if Shaul Paul is as goddamn important as he claims, if he is the lone apostle to the Gentile world, why are all the prophetic references to him so decidedly negative? Why isn't there a single positive comment about the principal author of the Christian New Testament to be found anywhere in any prophecy?
Well, the Christians love a martyr.
If it is Shaul we should be listening to, why is Dode, the man whose status and testimony Paul sought to annul, featured in more prophecies and testimony than anyone else? In fact, more than everybody else combined. If Paul is telling the truth and Dode is lying, why is it that Paul consistently misquotes and contradicts God while Yahweh proclaims that Dode is always right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this Dode's song and not an ode to Shaul? Why is Shaul's name synonymous with Sheol, which just happens to mean hell? Why is he a Benjamin?
Yeah.
The sun headed south and to the sea of Gentiles, and a wolf, if he is to be believed. Why does Dode's name mean beloved? Why is Dode the one from Yahudah, beloved of Yah? Why Shaul is from the wayward tribe of Benjamin? Why is Dode afforded almost every positive title, accolade and attribute by God himself, from the chosen one to the set apart one, from the Son of God to the hand of God, from Messiah King, from the branch to the protective shepherd and sacrificial lamb, if we aren't supposed to value his contribution to our lives? Why is Dode accompanying Yahweh upon his return and then presented ruling the world with God building a house for his throne if his life and testimony are to be discounted? Why are the only titles God associated with Shaul, the father of lies, the son of evil, and the plague of death, if there is anything good or right about him? Asked another way, since the book of Acts claims that Paul was such a big shot, such a persuasive orator and prolific writer, a man who had traveled through the Greco-Roman world, the best student of Gamaliel, the leading rabbi of his day, and a man who was supposedly met with numerous kings along the way, why isn't there a single reference to him in any of the communities or any of the nations he visited? Having allegedly given speeches before provincial governors, kings, and emperors, why didn't a court scribe record his message? Why isn't the Christian globetrotter mentioned by Tacitus, by Pliny, by Josephus, or even by a rabbi? Why is Paul's written account of his life in Galatians so incompatible with the story he told Luke in Acts? Why couldn't he get his own story straight? Why did he die miserable and alone, rejected by all he sought to influence? What did those who listened to Paul and rejected him realize that Christians fail to see today?
Good question.
Rest assured, before the conclusions of this review, we will expose Shaul Paul's irrational attempts, both spoken and written, to sorry, constrain and restrict the importance of Dod, the beloved of Yahweh. You will know, as does God, why the plague of death must be vanquished. Standing up for the one who stood with him, Yahweh reveals, and so I will pulverize, I will crush his foes, especially those who seek to constrain and restrict him. Then out of his presence, I will plague those who shun him by attempting to decrease his status. The very essence of Judaism and Christianity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what these religions were based upon, was degrading Dod to artificially create this myth of either Jesus or to rebel against that myth by proposing a false Messiah and a star to overshadow Dod. Both Christianity and Judaism are guilty of these very things that God himself said, I will pulverize and crush. And you read the basis of Judaism and the arguments that are made in the Talmud, and the first thing you recognize is there's two people written out of the story, two individuals, Yahweh and Dod.
Yeah, and Dod, yeah.
Yahweh and Dod. Yeah, they give some mention to Moshe. But two most important people in this story, Yahweh and Dod, no. It's completely written out of the story. And Christianity is nothing more than transferring and robbing Dod of everything that God said about him to create this mythical caricature who never lived. Talk about insulting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that mythical caricature has nothing to do with Passover. Not even mentioned in passing. And his greatest gift, which is the fulfillment of Matzah. He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's so disgusting that you have a religion, the most popular religion in the world, and it's based upon this Odyssean and Dionysian corruption of everything that Dod represents. No, angry God is regarding Christianity.
Spit bullets.
I can tell you that if you are an advocate of Christianity and you make it to 2033, you better have some fire retardant.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure it'd do you any good.
Yeah, there's no any place to hide.
You will
you
be
take your soul right out there and listen. Yeah.
Yeah. Empirically, having dissected, compared, and analyzed most of what Shaul Paul said and wrote, I realized that the principal author of the Christian New Testament was not only replacing Dod with his mystical God-man, Jesus Christ, but was decreasing Dod's status to elevate his own. I mean, just think of for a moment Christ. Christ, which actually is from Chryso, meaning to drug, and in Greek, in Greek is a Greek title. Mm-hmm. And it is based entirely upon what Peter supposedly claimed, which was actually written by the Roman Catholic Church in the early 4th century, declaring that you are the Christ. Well, what would that mean? There's only one prophecy that even speaks of of the Messiah returning. It's not God's, not Dod's most important title. It's not even probably in his top five most important titles. And the only place that it's addressed as somebody who's going to make a sacrifice for his people is in the book of Daniel. And at the time, Gabriel, which means God's most courageous and competent man, which is the very Gabor title we read here in this Mizmor, mm-hmm. is the one delivering the message. He is the Messiah, and that's why he says, as the Messiah, I'm going to do these things. And yet you name your Jesus as if Christ was a last name and he is magically a Messiah, when the only place that even speaks of that is actually delivered by Dode and tells you that Dode's going to come in year 4,000, yeah. 4 days before Passover, he's going to enter the city of Jerusalem. And not only will he be cut off, at that moment, the people are going to create an entirely different covenant, a different agreement. And with that prophecy, you're a Jew and you can't even figure out, wait a minute, it's year 4,000, yeah, and here he is. This must be Dode. Let's respect what he's doing for us. But not a single Jew recognized it. And that gave license to Christians to corrupt this whole message. And that's what it's all about. As a result of studying these things, we realize that it was Paul's spoken and written assessment of Dode, the first in Acts, the second in Romans, where he based his religion on transferring what God said of Dode, the actual Son of God and Messiah, to this mythical individual by the misnomer Jesus Christ. As a result, those who will study what was said will come to understand that this is the essence of replacement theology. Paul's irrational and counterproductive assessments of Dode were contrived because the father of lies realized that HaMashiach's life and lyrics not only undermined his New Testament, but they also obliterated his credibility. And soon enough, you will know why that is the case. By contrast, Yahweh and Dode share the following in common, and we're going to read through this. We're still recording. We're no longer broadcasting, but many of those who gathered with us on this Shabbat evening are listening by phone where they can still hear our voice. And since 90% of those who listen to this program or more do so at their convenience through the archives that are posted in many places around the web, go to yadayah.com and it'll direct you to them. We'll continue for another moment or two, but we've covered a lot of ground for one night. Sometimes mm-hmm. you've got to say, okay, that's enough. Like, let this sink in because this is life-altering. Therefore, my steadfast – this is Yahweh speaking now. You're not properly introduced, Yahweh happens to be God. Creator of the universe, author of life, the one who inspired these words, actually spoke these words. Cool guy. I'd recommend getting to know him. He spoke these words 3,000 years ago. And he said, therefore, my steadfast commitment to the truth and my unwavering love, determined devotion, and enduring favoritism, my ongoing affection and genuine favoritism are with him. In my name, his light will radiate and enlighten, and his brilliant horn will be lifted up, raised on high, and exalted. Yahweh is setting us up for something that he only says once in all of the breadth of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, which is that if what I have said about Dode is not true of Dode, then you need to call me a liar. Because this idea of transferring everything that I said about Dode to somebody else as if I didn't know who I was talking about is tantamount to calling me a liar. And good luck with that, folks. Not going to work out for you. So he is setting up this now where he says that his commitment to the truth, his trustworthiness, his honesty, his reliability, and his unwavering love, devotion, favoritism, affection are with him. So, not with the guy whose name is never mentioned, Jebus. Not with Bar Kokhba, not with Akiba, not with Shaul, with Paul, not with Peter. There's only one him listed by name and title in this mizmor. It's Dode. And he says, in my name, his light will radiate enlightened, and his brilliant horn will be lifted up and raised on high and exalted. Keren is the word for horn. It means to radiate light. God is expecting us to use the brains that he designed within us. He's expecting us to use the nesama, which is our conscience, along with our nefesh, which is our consciousness. Our consciousness, our nefesh soul, enables us to observe what is around us and to respond appropriately. And our nefesh conscience enables us to analyze things, to make the necessary connections to understand. And in this case, what he is saying is that somebody in his name is being equated to a Kareen. Kareen is the term that Yahweh introduced when Abraham and Yishak went up to Mount Moriah. And when Yahweh says, don't harm your son, your only son, whom you love. Do not take the knife to your son, because I'm going to provide the lamb. And when he said that, the lamb was seen on the top of Mount Moriah with his Kareen shining and caught within the thickets. This is an ode right back to that, because Yahweh was saying, I'm going to provide the lamb. Here is father and son, Abraham and Yishak, about to perform a sacrifice, and Yahweh says, no, you're not going to take your only son, because I'm going to offer mine. And that's what Kareen brings us back to. It is by making these kind of connections that we come to understand. And Yahweh says, that lamb that I said I was going to provide, my son, well, he's going to be lifted up, raised on high, and he's going to be exalted. We're going to respect him. Everyone who has gathered together in Jerusalem awaiting Yahweh's return with Dode on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, October 2nd, 6:22 p.m. as the sun sets in Jerusalem, October 2nd, 2033. Every one of us is going to love Dode. He's our Savior. We're going to respect him. We are going to Zechariah 12. We're going to look at the one that Yahweh has come with, whom we pierced, and we're going to cry. We're going to shriek. We're going to explode in every emotion that a person can have. And it is so Yahweh to do it this way. This is Yahweh's crowning achievement. He's coming back for the reconciliation of his people. And he's telling us in Zechariah 12, I'm not only sharing the spotlight with my son, Dode. I want you to notice that it's Dode who struck the blows for your salvation, who received the blows for your salvation. He is saying, it is Dode that you really ought, you should focus on. That's something of that Zechariah 12. 12 passage that the Jews are wont to deny. You know, we look, it's often translated, look at me and whom, you know, they have pierced, but it isn't. It's look at the one that I've come with that they have pierced, and acknowledge him as the only begotten Son, my only Son, whom you did this to. And recognize how important that is. Well, this is an ode to that thought, because Abraham and Yitzhak performed a dress rehearsal for the fulfillment of Pesach, Passover, as father and son on Moriah, just as Yahweh endowed, as father and son on Moriah, exactly 40 Obel, 2,000 years later. One occurred near 2,000 Yah, the other in year 4,000 Yah, 33 CE. Why we know, by the way, that 40 Obel from 33 CE is 2033. You've got it boldly presented in your timeline, D. While we're mentioning that timeline, it's there are two parts of the Yada Yah website, which I love, that are the parts that I use the most are the index, where you can go and you can find every place where, for example, Yeshaya 52 and 53 are presented. And it'll take you right to them, and it's so helpful. And the other is the timeline, because, you know, this is a long story. It's a 6,000-year story. And Dee was the principal lead in this, but she worked with others like Jackie to get this done. And it's a marvelous tool to know when things happen and how this plan all plays out over this enormous canvas of time, ultimately of 7,000 years, the first 6,000 coming to a close here just 10 years from now, with Dode's return. And when he returns, he's going to be the center of attention. Yahweh doesn't have an egotistical light in his spirit. He is all about
very good.
Sharing.
Very good.
And so even at this most marvelous moment in his existence, I mean, literally the most brilliant moment in Yahweh's long existence is Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations in 6,000 Yah. And he's not just sharing it with his son, Dode. He's got Dode presented as the star. You've got to love Yahweh. So engaging, so approachable, so enriching and empowering, so comfortable to be around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's by looking at one, we see the other. Seen together, they encapsulate the Torah. They emulate the covenant. The relationship has made it possible for us to understand and thereby experience Yahweh's enduring love and mercy. So it's an amazing story. Passage that we're going to begin next week is rather powerful, because it says he himself will call out to me and welcome me, announcing, "You are my Father, and I also will appoint him and make him Bakur Ani, my firstborn son." The
beautiful.
Elon, highest and uppermost in comparison to the kings and rulers of the earth. It is just marvelously beautiful. So that's where we'll pick up. Yeah, next week. Thank you both for being part of this program. It is an exciting time to not just share Yahweh's prophetic testimony in a way that has never been done before, not just call attention to Dode and the role he played as Zeruah, not just call Yisrael back home, but to actually be part of the prophecy. Yeah,
it's
small part,
yeah,
but still.
It's so cool.
It is.
Freaks me out, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Being literally part of the prophecy of calling God's people home. Now, quite frankly, God should have been able to do a lot better. Well, I'll speak for myself anyway. He should have been allowed to do better.
No,
but,
feel free.
But the fact is...
He's working with you, and you have to work with us. So there.
Yeah, so, yeah, there we go. So, all turnabout curve. No, it's God is as, Yahweh is as responsive to us as he is to his son. He is who he is. He does not change. And so... Just as he is sharing the spotlight at this moment with his son, with whom he worked to fulfill the Moed Mikre, every one of them, all seven. He is now sharing this spotlight of announcing, heralding their return with us. And he likes doing so. This is his style. He's God, so I guess he could, if he wanted to be this big booming voice and communicate on his own without working through the likes of us. But it's not who he is.
No.
And it's not just that he likes to work through Ibn Ani, his co-workers. It's that this is the most pleasing thing of all to him. And it's not just effective for him and pleasing for him to have his message conveyed through people, to his people. God's so pleased to have those of us working with us that he shares the spotlight. Do we deserve to be a part of that story? No. It doesn't change the fact that he's chosen it to be that way because that's what he wants. He likes to share. Yeah, really. This is his thing. He loves to share. His idea is, I want to work together, but understand that working together, I'm going to give you more than you give me, and that's the way I really like it.
Well.
And that's where we are. Well, that's a lot for one program. So we're going to say,
it's one of my favorite broadcasts.
Happy Shabbat to one and all. I'm really delighted we got to work in a full meaning of Zoroah, and then to see Zoroah become the essential glue that ties together the introduction to Isaiah 53 with the Zoroah presented in 52 and in 53, all part of the same story at the same time. It's wonderfully exciting.
Well done, Yada.
Yes, to be a part of God's story on behalf of his people. And, you know, God was pretty clear. He says, you know, this is going to work out well for those that chose to work with me. He doesn't forget. He's
good news.
Yeah. It's a really good thing.
Wow.
So we don't do it for that. Is it nice to know that that is his style and the way that he's going to share? Yes, but is it? It's not the reason you do it. We do it because we love Yah. We love Dode. We respect Moshe. We respect Dode. We respect Yahweh. And it's that love and respect that causes us to want to reciprocate, to want to please.
Yeah, it's just so much there to enjoy. Wow.
Yes.
Well, he's our father. I mean, we love him.
Yes.
You want to do what your dad does.
You do. And it's wonderful to see the results. And it's, I was with a young woman today. She was helping me with some documentation. And she was going through how horrible her father and mother were. Just unbelievably horrible. And she's now listening to these shows and beginning to read the books. And she is like so many of us that did not win the parent lottery. We chose our parents poorly. And it is such a pleasure to have had parents like both of us did, and to go from that to Yah. You know, that is definitely winning the lottery there. Yes. So for all of you who are listening to this program, you know, there's aches and pains in every family until you get to the family, and that's the covenant family. And there our Father becomes Yahweh, and he is exceedingly kind and generous.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Look forward to being with you this time next week. May Yah bless. Happy Shabbat to one and all.
Yes, Shabbat Shalom to all of y'all.
Good night.
Yeah.